Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 73, recorded Tuesday and Wednesday, April 14th and 15th, 2009. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: eating on the road, and more things you'll never want to hear. Well, this week, I'm coming to you today by popular demand from the business class toilet, or loo, of a South Africa Airlines Airbus A340 somewhere between New York and Johannesburg, South Africa. No, I'm not going to do the entire show from here. I think there's probably some other passengers that may want to use this room for what it was designed for, and I think the background noise is going to be a little bit much, but, you know, the Travel Commons Twitter followers demanded a return to this podcast's roots, recording in the bathroom of wherever I may be, and so here I am on a 17.5-hour flight, 6.5 hours to Dakar, Senegal, and then what, I don't, you know, 10, 11 hours across Africa to Joburg. That's a real live lesson on how big Africa is. So, okay, I think I hear somebody rustling outside the door, and I've got a glass of South African Cabernet waiting for me back in seat 4G. So, you know what, I'll finish the rest of this in my hotel in Joburg later this evening. All right, so recording now in a bit more comfortable surroundings, both physically as well as acoustically. I'm in the Rosebank Hotel in Johannesburg. I arrived this evening, probably about 4:15 now on a Wednesday, and will be leaving next Tuesday evening after I do a client workshop. I'll tell you, I don't usually care for staying out of town over a weekend, but with a 17.5-hour commute home, there wasn't that much of an alternative. The downside, as well, obviously the downside missing my family, but another downside is that the clothes and the shoes that I needed for a weekend stay bumped me up a suitcase size. So I actually had to check luggage, which frequent listeners know I think is just absolutely a cardinal sin for any business traveler. However, I'll tell you, with the alternative being spending all weekend in black wool slacks and black dress shoes, checking the bag felt like the lesser of two evils. And actually, it wasn't that bad on my flight from Chicago to LaGuardia. The bag showed up on the luggage carousel before I even got down to the before I got downstairs to the baggage area. Situation in here in Joburg was not that good. It was a good sort of 30 to 45 minute wait in a baggage claim area that looked like it had been ripped apart. I guess new construction, they're renovating the entire airport pending the 2010 World Cup here in South Africa. But as you can tell, I'm back at the travel grind. After a bit of a vacation, had a week off doing some skiing in Breckenridge, Colorado. You know, late spring skiing is always a bit of a crapshoot, but I'll tell you, when 31 inches of snow arrived in the 7 days before we did, I knew we were in for some great skiing. Prior to that, though, my travel really wasn't that intense, or as intense as it had been at the beginning of the year. Some of the travel I talked about in the last episode. I had a trip out to San Francisco 1 week, and then was in New York and Philadelphia the next. I'll tell you, dodging drunks in Midtown Manhattan on St. Patrick's Day was that trip's highlight. Unlike my earlier trips, though, I was able to avoid flying out on Monday morning, skipping that frequent traveler rush hour. And flying out on Tuesday morning, there was really no need to use United's Global Services line cut in O'Hare. Indeed, neither the status nor the regular security lines were more than, say, five people deep. It kind of reminded me just a bit of the emptiness in the airports after they reopened after the September 11th, 2001 attacks. I mean, obviously the economic downturn is nothing that drastic, but there are echoes. It reminds me a little bit of just how far down travel went at that time. But then returning from Philadelphia, 2 weeks later on a Thursday afternoon, I found myself dodging wave after wave of strollers as O'Hare was filled with families departing on spring break vacations. So even though the business travel may be off, at least in Chicago, people just gotta get away, gotta find some sun at the back end of what has been a tough winter. Now, I also managed to schedule myself home the week before my vacation, which made that usual pre-vacation work sprint a bit more bearable than usual. Though I'll tell you, returning to my office after 2 weeks on the road in San Francisco and Philadelphia, I found a rather stubborn light green mold colony had set up camp in my tea mug. I wasn't sure if the green color was native to that species of mold or was from the last bit of green tea that it had ingested. Apparently, I had forgotten to dump that tea out prior to leaving town. Whatever it was, it took a good day's soaking to clear it out, and a good bit of scrubbing too. This Monday, though, when I was in my office, I made sure before I walked out the door that my office and my tea mug were clean before I left for this 2 week jaunt. So following up, back in episode 69 in the travel tip segment, I gave Ian Morgan the prize for the most elegant and useful travel tip, responding to a story I'd told earlier about always forgetting my hotel room number while at my morning workout. Ian wrote, "I can sympathize with your problems with remembering room numbers. I always type my room number into my phone and then hit dial and then hang up. It's then in your call log if you ever need it." Now, of course, in the age of the iPhone, there's no problem that can't be solved with an app, or at least a multitude of them. Earlier this month, a guy by the handle Denrail pointed out via Twitter that there were at least five applications available to remind you of your room number. Now, I couldn't find all five, but I quickly found two: Room, which is free, and Zimmer, which is either 99 cents or $1.99. I saw a couple of different prices. I mean, go figure. I mean, Denrail suggests using a camera to take a picture of your door, but I'm still using Ian's call log approach. It's elegant and it's free. Flying internationally always reminds me of those little inconsistencies that annoy frequent travelers. And the classic one is around mobile phone usage. I mean, why, for instance, is it safe to use mobile phones in the US after landing when the plane is taxiing to the terminal, but elsewhere it's not safe until I leave the plane? I'm always forgetting this one and always firing up the BlackBerry and the iPhone the minute we touch down and get nasty looks from international flight attendants. Now, though, I hit a brand new one today, though, on my South Africa Airways flight. In the pre-flight prep talk, as we were taxiing out from our stopover in Dakar, the purser announced that all smartphones, and he specifically named iPhones, Nokia N series and E series, and BlackBerries, were not allowed to be used in flight, even when put in airplane mode. And they were serious. I mean, during the meal service after takeoff, a flight attendant pointed to my iPhone and asked about it. I told her, nah, it wasn't an iPhone, it's just an iTouch, which satisfied her. I had never heard of that restriction before. Indeed, not even on that flight. It wasn't mentioned on the first leg of my South Africa Airways flight, the JFK to Dakar leg. I don't know. They swapped in a new flight crew. Maybe they were carrying a new memo or something. But I'll tell you, this whole area of in-flight electronics is just a mess. I mean, on one hand, the airlines are saying that everything that emits a signal needs to be shut off or the plane will crash. And then on the other hand, they're selling Wi-Fi internet access for $10 a flight. I mean, which is it? And I mean, I've seen this confusion actually cause a little nastiness in the skies. Now, I always hate the guys who make the flight attendants ask them 2 or 3 times before takeoff to shut off their phones before they finally say goodbye. I mean, look, this one isn't a new rule and there's no ambiguity around it, so you plan your conversations accordingly. But returning from my last San Francisco trip, one passenger decided that he was the electronics hall monitor and started yelling across the cabin at another passenger to turn off his crackberry, as he called it, as we were approaching O'Hare. I mean, this was a bit much. I mean, the guy didn't appear to be broadcasting. The flight attendants were still buttoning up the cabin, but the hall monitor was emphatic to the point of sort of near belligerence. I mean, I don't know, there are enough hassles in the air without electronics vigilantes calling you out. While I was out on vacation in Breckenridge, I received my renewal notice for CLEAR, the Registered Traveler Program. It said that my CLEAR membership would automatically renew on April 29th, charging my Visa card $179. This is a tough one for me. I've talked about this on a number of podcasts, and I keep going back and forth about the value of CLEAR, especially for a premium traveler. It seems to me that there is a significant overlap between what CLEAR offers and what, say, United and American and Continental offer their high-status flyers. That is, a line cut. And I've talked even at the top of this show and talked about in the last episode about the United Global Services line cut at O'Hare, which is as good or better than anything that CLEAR can offer. But if you're flying out of some airports that do not have these sort of premium lines, then CLEAR is worth the investment. Indeed, yesterday, when I was traveling out of JFK's Terminal 4 on South African Airways, even the business class line, their version of the premium line, had tailed back pretty far. However, CLEAR is in Terminal 4. I was able to pull out my CLEAR card and, for no line at all, immediately go straight to a TSA screening machine. However, if I count and I think through the number of times that CLEAR has provided me that benefit, JFK being one, Dulles Airport being another, it's 10 times that I've really used it. So is that line cut worth $17.90 a throw for me? I don't know, but I'm thinking probably not. So hey, if you have a question, a story, a comment, the voice of the traveler, send it along, text or MP3 file, the email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can also send me a Twitter message. You can follow me at mpeacock, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is eating on the road. Dinner time on my last visit to Philadelphia found me sitting at the small bar of Tinto, a Spanish restaurant, having a couple of plates of tapas, one of grilled octopus, another of sautéed wild mushrooms with caramelized shallots, which, by the way, I ordered immediately after the couple two stools down had gotten their order. I mean, the smell was just phenomenal. Had a couple of good glasses of Spanish red wine, some Riojas, and a couple of bursts of chat with the bartender about her favorite wines and how business was going in this economy, stuff like that. It was a great meal and a nice way to spend a couple of hours on my own outside of my hotel room, both important things for frequent travelers. And it got me to thinking about what makes for a good place for one person to eat on the road. Now, for many guys, this question doesn't take much thought. I mean, the sports bar concept, might as well have been created for the solo guy traveler. It has everything a guy needs: a good burger, large glasses of Coors Light, and walls of TV screen showing every ESPN channel, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News. But while I like a good burger as much as the next guy, though I'll take something a bit more interesting than Coors Light, a regular diet of them is usually sort of the express ride to the angioplasty table. So, outside the sports bar genre, what makes for a good place for a solo traveler? Now, taking good food and cleanliness as table stakes, there are three things that come to mind. The first thing is availability. Can you get in at a reasonable time? Now, most of the time, I don't start thinking about dinner until, I don't know, at the most, a couple hours before I'm ready to eat. I mean, I'm working. So, any place with, say, a month or a 3 day or even a 1 day waiting list for a seat doesn't make the cut. And then, given that I'm usually working all day and I know I'm going to have typically more work to do in the evening in my hotel room, I got a fairly tight dining window. I mean, I'm usually trying to eat somewhere between, or at least sit down somewhere between 6 or 7 p.m. At Tinto in Philly, I walked in 7 p.m. Thursday night, was seated right away. In San Francisco, the week before, I had a 7:30 reservation at the Slanted Door, a well-known Pan-Asian restaurant down on the Ferry Building, but I wasn't seated until 8:15, and then I didn't get out until 9:30, and I still had documents to review before I could go to bed. I'll tell you that did not make for a relaxing meal. Now, the second important thing is small plates. Not small physical plates, but small plates of food. I like variety. I like to try multiple things on a menu. However, as a solo eater, ordering a standard size starter and a main course, you usually end up with way too much food. So you either lose out on variety by only ordering one dish, or you feel guilty for leaving behind a bunch of uneaten food. Yes, I heard about those starving children in Africa when I was growing up. Or, probably more typically, you eat it all anyhow, en route to the 20 extra pounds that many frequent travelers find themselves carrying around. Small plates, either small servings like tapas or sushi, or the option to scale down an entree portion, small plates are the perfect way to solve this problem. And the third thing is bar seating. Now, when you're eating by yourself, nothing puts an exclamation point on it like sitting alone at a table for two or four. When you sit there staring ahead, perhaps reading, maybe playing Brick Breaker on your BlackBerry until your food arrives. And then you'll wolf it down because there's really nothing else to do at the table. And then you pay up and you leave. That's a pretty soulless transaction and certainly, again, not a relaxing one. Eating at the bar gives you at least some shot of human interaction and at least some chance for some entertainment to give you something to do while you're waiting for the food. The human action, be it with the bartender or with, some of the people sitting down beside you, sort of the entertainment value, sometimes just watching the bartender mix up a drink, having watching him talk to the waitresses. If you're sitting at one of those places with an open kitchen, watch one of the sous chefs burn his arm. There's just things to do when you're sitting at the bar. And, I mean, if the bar isn't completely swamped, that bartender is usually good for, I don't know, three, four dialogue exchanges, kind of like what I had at Tinto that Thursday night. And though it's a bit riskier, there's always the chance for a bit of a conversation with some of the other bar patrons. But again, there's some risk involved in that. Now, I'm actually beginning to see some restaurants move this sort of bar seating vibe down to table height with communal seating tables, long tables that they'll seat multiple parties at. So when you show up, you get the next seat, and you're going to be sitting maybe in the midst of another party or right next to another party. Again, you don't feel like you're sitting by yourself. In Chicago, a couple of restaurants, Publican and Avec, are two restaurants that I know do that, and Clyde Commons in Portland's another place. So you combine good food with availability, small plates, and bar seating. Tinto hit all of those that Thursday night in Philly, and I left after having a great time. And I've recommended the restaurant to a number of folks. But now, if I can just get these restaurants to build their websites in something other than Flash, so I can read the menus on the iPhone before I call and before I walk in, that would be the next great thing. Well, there you go. A bit of a different music choice. You know, sometimes I feel like I get a little tinkly, fall into a bit of a twee rut with the world music and the electronica. And sometimes I just want to break out the black t-shirt, hold up a fist, and bob my head a bit. And I think that that last cut got it out of my, that last piece of bridge music got it out of my system. So anyhow, the second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is more things you never want to hear. In last month's episode, we featured Lori Hum's question, what is the one thing you never want to hear on a flight, and asked for your input, and we got it. My sister, Dawn Owens, offered this one, God, I should not have eaten that. Steve Frick said, I don't ever want to hear a pilot say, I'm so tired I could just crash. Greg B. said, the one thing I never want to hear at any stage of a flight, brace for impact. Steve F. gave two suggestions. One, the smoke in the cabin is nothing to be concerned about. Steve says, in my experience, the smoke in the cabin is always something to be concerned about. And at the gate on a continental flight out of St. Louis, he heard, we have an FAA inspection team riding along with us, so we will be doing everything by the book. I guess that that implies that when the inspection team isn't there, they're not doing everything by the book, which is really kind of spooky. Michael Golden, who used to fly for Mesa out of O'Hare and now flies for the Citation Shares, a fractional jet company, wrote in with this. Michael says, you know, after you've boarded the plane and the captain comes on the PA and says anything with a slightly apologetic tone that begins with, well, folks, or we have a slight, or we have a bulb out and maintenance is going to come and fix it. I can tell you from experience, saying you have a bulb out is just a euphemism for something is wrong and I'm not going to tell you. But instead, I'm going to tell you it's a light bulb because you, the stupid public, know what a light bulb is and know that if one is out, it's no big deal and you won't start worrying. Or there's the always dreaded lav announcement. I was an Embraer 170 not long ago, and the lav quit flushing. Going from Orlando to LaGuardia, about halfway through, the captain said the current state of the lav fluid level was such that he felt we could complete the flight, but if there were many more uses, it would become a hazard, and we would have to divert to have it repaired. After that, no one had a sip of fluid or used the bathroom. And then, of course, there's the nonverbal thing that I don't want to hear. Shutting down an engine while taxiing out. That means you know you're going to be sitting there for a while. Michael, thanks for those. That's a great list. And if I can add one more of my personal favorites, something that I heard on an approach to DFW some years ago. We're not getting a down and locked indicator from the landing gear, but we'll be on the ground in a moment. So that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 73. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music is again from Magnatune.com, the We Are Not Evil label, Stinky Dog by Music Inside, Loco Venido by Folic, and the headbanging Just Don't by Lie Big. As always, you'll find links in the show notes to the Magnatune's artist pages. And a quick shout out, I'd like to thank my son Andrew for a touch-up of the Travel Commons logo. Nothing huge. He wanted to do a much bigger redo, but I just had him touch it up a little bit, take a look at it, and see if you can see what's changed. And always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, moans and groans, cries of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or send me a note on Twitter, mpeacock, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. And again, until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Safe travels. Take care. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing, my mind, no one
woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears